Okay, here we go. Running a little bit late here with some tech diffs. Yeah, difficulties in saying it. Welcome to American Dissonance. And I've got to go around here and jump around and grab some tabs. We're just running into some problems here to audio. I'm going to come back over here. So, hey, welcome everybody that's tuned in live right now. This will go downstream. Let me get back over here in a few tabs. Show now. It is American Dissonance on the rocks. And today, I'm doing a little bit of review here. And I'm waiting on tabs. It's terrible. Well, Betsy Gaines Quammen wrote a book, American Zion. And I listened to that. I was pretty impressed with her work. It's very academic. I found her along here in Twitter as I follow the Bundy Ranch situation these past several years. I haven't been there in 2014 and then being a witness at the trial in 2017 and 2018. So I listened to, I listened to her and Jacqueline Keeler on the Country Bookshelf. It went up to audio on YouTube. I was really glad for that. It was a free online event I signed up to listen to, and I'd come in right at the end, so I had missed it, but I was able to catch that up. I found that Betsy is a very good listener. A lot of times people are waiting for their turn to talk. She sat there pen in hand taking notes, and she and Jacqueline had many conversations and collaborated on works before. I'm going up through here on Twitter as Betsy and I had talked through few things here. I told her on her article, I thought it was extremely well written and informative. There's somebody called it a hit piece. And I played with some notions of hitting pieces and, of course, killing the darlings as it be and knocking some of the stuff out. But I'm going to be touching on some of those darlings of mine along the way. On the rocks today, I subtitled this last episode is 12th in this series of American Writing of What Matters, a Ponder Gander. And in this war of conscience, and I changed to this underlying subheading theme of there was a man to there was a woman, and subtitled it Enemies of the State, Unexpected Allies. I take this quote of Tom Clancy from a Facebook post. Thank you, Donna. What the government is good at is collecting taxes, taking away your freedoms, and killing people. It's not good at much else. Well, today, looking at American Zion, Cliven and Bundy, God and Public Lands in the West by Betsy Gaines Quammen, and Standing Rock, The Bundy Movement, and the American Story of Sacred Lands by Jacqueline Keeler. They are highlighted in this last episode in this series of American Dissonance. At number 12, I now ask you to be the jury. Betsy Gaines Quammen is a historical is a historian and conservationist. She received a doctorate in environmental history from Montana State University in 2017. With her dissertation focusing on Mormon settlement and public lands conflict, it led to the publishing of her book American Zion in March of 2020 by Torrey House Press. Follow her at on Twitter. You'll come back if you're you're listening downstream here, follow back to the link here, realliberty.media/author/vine, and you'll pick up some links here. Jacqueline Keeler is Dine. She's from the Dakota Sioux. She's a writer living in Portland, Oregon. She is editor of the anthology Edge of Mourning, Native Voices Speak for the Bear's Ears, and has contributed to many publications, including The Nation, Yes Magazine, and Salon. Standing Rock, The Bundy Movement, and American Story of Sacred Lands by Jacqueline Keeler was published in May of 2020 by Torrey House Press. Before I go, Father, let me just add this in here, that this pondering that I do, the paraphrase plagiarist, and gathering together some thoughts of others and bringing them together and making them my own. It's a fact-finding mission for a just war that's still in progress, and it's unfortunate that the possibility of where we might be heading as a nation, as a people, as a world, surviving first contact, that you know your enemy, meet them on the battlefield, and come away victorious. I didn't ever find who that quote would belong to. I left it as unknown. We all fall down. Some people wear deception like a coat. They just can't seem to take it off. Came from a book from Joseph Peluto. We're trading one form of slavery for another, Clive and Bundy said. In the court of lies, you can ask people to tell you who they are, but that's not where the truth hangs out. They don't know. They only know whom they shouldn't be like. Gary Spence. Why good people do awful things. The proliferation of evil is not inevitable. It survives through the choices we make. Dr. George Simon, I really like that guy. That came from his book, The Judas Syndrome. He lives in Little Rock, Arkansas. He worked with Department of Corrections, a clinical psychologist. I think he has a very good understanding of man. Confront a corpse at least once. The absolute absence of life is the most disturbing and challenging confrontation you will ever have. David Bowie. From Doc Mike, the redneck dentist, he's plays here at Real Liberty Media on Saturdays. He says all bleeding eventually stops. And from a revival, people say that where there's life, there's hope. And I have no quarrel with that, but also believe the reverse. There is hope, therefore I live. Stephen King. I say, is there a safe place anywhere? Everyone cares for something or someone. Who will help us, but we will not help ourselves. There is always hope. I really enjoyed your book, Betsy. So I want to join back over here in the chat where I can just keep a look here. If anybody has any questions along the way, I'd be glad to pass them along. So I posted that link there that you saw, Betsy, for the listening live. It's going to archive. There's a chat room over here at reallibertymedia.com. It's a Kiwi. If you click the RLM radio link also, then it'll bring you there with the option to sign in. And to the top, there's a player where you push to listen. So if you're listening downstream, this isn't going to go to YouTube. It goes to BitChute. It'll go to my publication page on the radio log. I found this from someone recently that I followed there on Twitter. It's Danielle McLean. Let's see here. Where is it? And, of course, I think I hear my buddy on the four-wheeler out there going to pull up. Out here in the country on Half Moon in the hills of Arkansas. I think I didn't come to it. Oh, here it is. Great, great, great. All right. I really like this. Boldly tell the story of the diversity and magnitude of the human experience. Seek sources whose voices we seldom hear. Journalists should seek out and report the human cost of the conflict. Journalists are not stereographers. They're not propaganda tools. SPJ's code of ethics says reporters must act independently, seek truth, and report it. And they cannot do this when the government is dictating what they write. Let me go back to my blog page here at Building. Let me go back up to the top. Let me maybe explain this here a little bit more. This subheading, the subtitle in it, this American dissonance, where I say on the rocks. We're going to come back to there. But this enemies of the state and unexpected allies. So the fact that Betsy has been willing to engage and take the time to consider what my opinion would be on her view of all this really speaks volumes to me. And as I was saying earlier, she gave me the link there for the interruptions here for the YouTube channel and Country Bookstore, and it was a good night. She said complicated topics with deeply thoughtful women. So I was going to broadcast this last week, and my internet was up and down, and it has been since too, but not near as bad. So hopefully this will continue to go through the live. Otherwise, it'll be in full unedited. So when I was out on my trip, a few weeks ago here, I went up to Mount Magazine, and I saw this pompous grass growing up here in this big old house. And the thought of the pretentious and how they grow pompous grass and what that's about. And any which way the wind blows, hot air rises, doesn't it? Well, we're taking into consideration fictional tales and historical count, and then that of history. So with Betsy having been called making a hit piece against the Bundys and their movement there, she was, like I said, very academic in what she presented. I'd heard a lot of that, read a lot of that before, but I did learn quite a bit that I did not know. There's a lot of tie-ins. Man, I have pages and pages of notes here that I've got. But a lot of these are bullet points that are going through the book. I'm going to skip forward a little bit. So this came from their from the Country Books shelf. I'm sorry, Country Bookstore, where they're speaking together. That's when I really got to take a good look there at Betsy. And I haven't read Jacqueline's book, but I will have to have that on the list to do. So Jacqueline says that, talking about Malheur, that it's a takeover. It wasn't really a standoff, which I agree. And she had quoted in 2014 in the Nation magazine and about the pipeline connection, the No Doubtful. She said that, can't the land make us one people? This is a very interesting view in contrast to of ideology. Between that of Mormon or anybody else, which we'll go into a little bit further. But how was it different there in Malheur and in Bunkerville and in the Dakotas there with the Sioux people and those others that came as water protectors? The police, it was definitely very aggressive towards those there in Standing Rock. She says they were treated differently by the police. The military occupation, where treaties are international, and they're the law of the land. So further readings will say how Indians were conquered. They're put on reservations. In actuality, they were supposed to have been sovereign nations, but they, along the lines, all that reservation land was taken, cheated out of them through head rights. Was one way when they broke up the Sioux Nation and then sold off, individuals sold their portions of land. We get down to the crossing there of the river, that pipeline. Hal Anthony from Behind the Woodshed and I had been talking about it at the time, and I'd worked in the steel fabrication and piping industry many years ago, and I know that the after the installation, basically, you know, it's like, I don't know, 6 months or something. If nothing breaks, then it's pretty much, hey, you're it's all on you, you know. And then that goes back to the government, and you got oil spills and all that stuff. I mean, it's happened so many times. And I told Hal that really the way that they could have beaten that really would have been to beat them back at cost and put into the contract so much protection of and this redundancy in the system that for to make sure that anything fails, that the, you know, they would have stopped the too much pollution from entering the water, but and then probably forcing them to abandon that line and maybe even move it just because the cost. Kira Young, Psychopaths in Charge. I was co-producing radio for her at Real Liberty Media for her, and she was in contact with a lot of folks. You can find her on Twitter, Psychopaths in Charge. Search her out on WordPress and enter in the No Dapple in your searches, and you'll find a lot of information and people from the Dakotas, and those nations, as it was happening. So on Sacred Lands, we talk about the Battle of Bunkerville there in Nevada. 21 years of not paying grazing fees and Mormon settlement and land sovereignty. This is a land use battle. So traditional uses by the Paiutes and what came about in the Sagebrush Rebellion and the Wise Movement. It's presented as an LDS worldview. That's the Latter-day Saints and Mormons, and to validating their own campaign. Cliven talks about God being there and it being sacred homeland, as said by their prophet Joseph Smith in the history of the church, and proprietary notions and beliefs. We hear from, which I learned a few extra things. Well, one thing for certain about the People's Rights Network, that's and Ammon Bundy started, but I hear it echoed from the White Horse Prophecy. Brand Thornton and I did a broadcast together where he discussed that, and it's here on my pages here at Real Liberty Media. So talk about their sense of history versus occupation by the Paiutes. I have here in my notes the Cliven story about how they were starving people and howled and shivered in the cold. The Paiutes throughout the region, for all the way up into the Oregon, I guess, and southern Nevada, Arizona, Utah. Okay, I'm being pinged over here. I think they called them diggers. Okay, it looks like I dropped off and came back in. Okay, Grimner says, I've been sitting here thinking about this. If you're going to continue doing shows, I think you need to reinstall voice meter. Recalls having a simulant issue. Yeah, so I was having all kinds of tech diffs here before we started. Hey, by the way, it's 420 somewhere. Puff, puff, pass. So Cliven, he was talking about how they was just all huddled together and basically that they were so primitive that they hardly was able to keep themselves warm or feed themselves. And like I said, I guess a derogatory term is they've been called diggers. He didn't say that. That's something I remember hearing from a long time back. Now, I lived there in Moapa Valley. I went to school in Overton in eighth grade and came back as a young teenager and lived and worked in Mesquite during football and Pop Warner. We played against Mesquite. Took three or four of us to get one of them big old boys down to the ground. Tackle, I tell you, they growing big up there. They work hard. And Bundy's, they've been called welfare ranchers. Gosh, there's so many sidelines I have to go off on here. You know, how hard they actually work for that out there, and where they run these cattle out here, and the fact that the cattle, they say, are causing harm. I think I need to keep on going here just a little ways before I come back into that. So, let's see, where am I? Yes, Jacqueline at Standing Rock, she demonstrates the military occupation of the indigenous nationhood. Mainstream media, they really didn't talk about it. as much as well, they kind of just took, like they normally do, and take with their headlines and sensations and run with it. Now, the non-governmental organizations, they join in suits, and but for their own environmental reasons. So they're, you've heard it said, the enemy of your enemy is your friend, but that may not always be the truth. And sometimes the friend of your enemy can be your friend. So in this subtitle here, Enemies of the State, Unexpected Allies, I call on both Jacqueline and Betsy as allies. And we have a responsibility for what we understand, not what other people say. So for me, I think it's important to try to falsify anything that I think it is that I know. That's why I spend most of my engagement with people that would be considered maybe anti-Bundys. And I want to be as educated as I can. And I think, Betsy's book is absolutely full of information that, and like I said before, there's many things I didn't know. Talk about the book of Ney and some ideas and that they cure power. Excuse me a second. Oh, okay. Thank you. All right. I'm glad I muted. I have to go back in, maybe pull that piece out. Well, here we go. Wherever I left off at. I was going to tell a story and thought it better not. I'll save that one. Okay, so Lakota and Dakota are allies. The Sioux, that means the people. Jacqueline talks about the white buffalo woman. And the pipe where when they came to the plains and making relationships with the land and life, and they came from the Great Lakes region, so they came to a place there where was it empty of people or was there others? I don't know. Deep long history of this world here, and most of it's not told. So here's something I learned from Jacqueline, was the name Bundy means bond servant. So she was there. She visited. A lot of people were welcomed into the home of Clive and Bundy. Let's see, 3 hours, I think, Betsy spent there talking to him. Jacqueline was there. A lot of other folks. So in that, she's discovered, looking back, where this English common law comes from, Anglo-Saxon law, and the sheriff being the supreme law of the land, about feudal law, lords, and how that those rights came about, and the assumptions that we have today, the God-given right to the land. Okay, excuse me. So also she talks about Karen Budd, Fallon, who was Cliven's attorney, and that she was the Solicitor General, I think, for the Department of Bureau of Land Management. She made quite a bit of wave suing for RICO against government employees, and also she discusses the Trump pardons and the Hammonds reversal in the pipeline, and the Secretary of State native being installed there by Biden in her book. Like I said, I hadn't read her book yet, but I got a lot of outtakes from it in her discussion with Betsy. And Betsy, matter of fact, notes that the Bundy campaign is religiously inspired. And this comes from her book. Ezra Taft Benson, in the Nay book, particularly a quote from Ezra, not in the Nay book, but Ezra Taft Benson, says it's a militant provocation of bloodshed, she says, talking about we the people and tying in the cross religions, belief like that they believe as theoconstitutionalist. I had said to her, I didn't quite understand the... well, there being such a crossover. Mormonism is considered by some as cult. Walter Martin, I think, wrote Kingdom of Cults. I'd looked at the LDS religion many 30-odd years ago. Of course, there's many apologetics that would counter. So, I mean, it's religion, and it's hard to make a measure of the means of somebody's faith, because we all believe a little differently, so we can't really prove a negative, right? So Cliven says that Jesus wrote the Constitution, meaning that by his that his understanding comes from his faith. And that's a logical fallacy in anybody's idea that we, to appeal to authority, right? But that doesn't say it's wrong to do so, because everybody else believes different. So where are the lines drawn? All right, and I think that comes to the idea of do no harm, and then where's that harm rectified? So that's how Cliven Bundy understands it. Colonialism, how it happened, grabbing resources, indoctrination, and control. But he talks about in from the Book of Mormon, the Lamanites, they were the natives then, the dark-skinned race, and it being necessary to convert them to that they be able to bring about the latter days. So this all in prophecy and subject to that. How is the law applied differently at Standing Rock? This begins at questions about 30 minutes in. How is the law applied differently at Standing Rock with the Bundys? And Jacqueline says that again talks about how treaties are international law, and how they were under a military occupation. I believe the whole country is really under occupation, as opposed to what government should have or would have been. She also says that Nevada gave up the rights on entering the Union. I think that's history right there. That's pretty much a fact. So therein comes the contention of these federally owned lands, or so-called, which is public domain. And she says that Malheur was was an agreed upon management between ranchers, the tribe there, the Northern Paiutes, and wildlife management as a gold standard would be with somebody from the Audubon Society, a compact. And she says that Bundy came up there to create conflict to gain power. And more on the doctrine of the discovery from power and or from the papal bull on about claiming land, title from first use, and the legal basis for title. Jester's able to be cheated out of it, I guess. More likely said. Betsy says about law enforcement was preferential towards the white standoffs. That's kind of a hard question there, because there was kind of a different type of occupation there. I think that there's probably definitely there was some bias there. I don't know. I don't have the answers for that. Emma called it a peaceful pushback in Bunkerville, and that of the hard stand in Oregon. It's you know, the Bundys, they stay in the news. Probably some of the most written about people there ever was. I'm a Bundy supporter, with apologetics, and I think addressing people of different opinion is a very good thing. I'm sure I'm going a long ways here for thinking that I wasn't going to be very long about it. I still have pages and pages of notes here. I can say definitely get the book. I got the audio instead of the hard copy, which is a disadvantage, but it's also, I like to listen to audio and write notes as I'm listening, but it's harder to go back and pull the full quote. You got to go back and forth. But really did like it. Betsy said that the narrator kind of messed up some words, and I found one that bugs me as much as saying you and I when it should be you and me. And you hear it all the time from people in mainstream media and TV shows, all that stuff, movies, whatever, writings. But instead of saying idea, the woman says ideal. I got a good ideal. Now, other people say idea, and I more tend to give a little bit of leeway with that one, because the letter R, if you go up to, say, Boston, you know, or Maine, more specifically, if there's not a letter R in the word, add it, and if there is one, take it out, like lobster, right? Now, the South has, this comes from the English accent. You know, you go to Great Britain, Hong Kong, and, you know, it was China, said China, put an R in there. And the South, it did the same thing. Put a, like, tobacco is tobacco, or backer. Shortened up. So it really ties language together, and I really went off on a sidetrack there. Where was I? Okay, multiple court cases says the U.S. government can own land. She touches on the John Birch Society and McCarthyism. Says Bundy's claims come from having been connected by settlement and ancestry, that is, that by that prior use. There's a question of what might start an armed rebellion. Let's see, she said it'd be conflated by Second Amendment, land rights, and mask mandate, which Ammon Bundy is been real big up there in Idaho now about that, and haven't been arrested 4 or 5 times, and we'll see how that goes. So I think the court is June the 26th, up in Idaho, for him having gone into the Capitol building during the time of them wanting to make some mandates about wearing masks and stuff up there. We'll see how that plays out. That was a question. So, yeah, let's see what. That's what Betsy said. Now, Jacqueline said, adds that the January 6th event talks about the Oregon Senate walkout and county government there, and talks about the LDS policy in government also. Pretty interesting. One of the I seen just the other day, one of the lawmakers up there in Oregon was something happening with him for having letting people into the building. Here's another question, and the second to the last question there that they got, and the the last one kind of goes back with another one. Let me see here. Does the LDS and Indian claims of religious and spiritual beliefs trump the other? Jacqueline says that the first is for a claim to land, and the latter is in relationship to the land. Betsy goes on to saying about minimizing grazing versus it being living with or on the land, you know, tradition and habitat versus that of a domain and the landscape. So they say there has to be a reassessment. Do I still have this pulled up? I think I do. Yeah, what is sovereignty? So this came up in the Twitter feed today. Betsy retweeted it, and it's about Jacqueline Keelan. She is talked about here in The Guardian, theguardian.com, U.S. News, 2021, May 28, Sovereignty, Colonialism, Standoffs, U.S. Government, Jacqueline Keeler. You can read that if you'd like. You look that up for yourself. I'm not going to. This is a continuing war in the West, and it's far from being settled. I said it ain't over. I had so much to say that I was going to talk about my involvement throughout all of this, and how much am I going to get into that? It's probably not very much. But I've been there for... Nevada's been my second home since 1969, and Moapa Valley since, the latter 70s. Been all over the country. I talked to Betsy there on the Twitter about some of the places I've been, the pictographs, and up there. I found one that had depicted the conquistadors in the helmet, you know, the metal helmet. No telling what's happened to them. Have they been vandalized? Let me see where I'm coming to here. Well, okay, so we're following the prey. It's that's nomads versus the settling ranchers, the taming of the land. So that's the conflict we look at as far as the indigenous on the lands or later coming into the conquering and settling of the West. Ryan Bundy had said something about, I remember Betsy saying that, you know, as far as the Indians goes, they got screwed, but there's no change in it. How do you go back? Is there any going back? When we get into thinking about who the Indians are now, as I was saying, well, the Dakota and Lakota, they came to the plains there from the Great Lakes. Who was there before? I mean, how do you go back? What is a restoration? Then their bloodline has been, through genocide. I've got that on up here into the notes somewhere. Genocide, what all has happened to these people that've selective breeding. A lot of the original characteristics of the original peoples are pretty small. It's been a horrific historical happenings to people, not only here, but throughout the world. It's a cynical campaign, right? What is the solution? They've diluted the blood, intermarrying with natives and reshaping the landscape. The poor, ignorant Indian, as Brigham Young said. The wars, the backgrounds for dissonance. We've got harassing the bureaucrats and riders of the Purple Sage, state sovereignties, the roots and the state's rights or the people's rights. It's the U.S. efforts, right? I'm sorry, the U.S. of backing up. Well, I see where we was talking about Powell's exploration of the American rivers, and so kind of contrasting Israel and Zionism and Mormonism, colonialism, all this stuff. And it's pretty intensive study, and I think Jacqueline did a very good job going back and discussing all of that, and just from the briefness I got out of her discussion there. So we see a transition from church founding and background to environmentalism and preservation through the Antiquities Acts and designating national parks parks and so forth. And so what happened is they were ended up depriving use of lands by the grazers, and there's different rules. Well, who's God? Who's God? All right, so this is into the book here, of American Zion. You're talking about Mormon quakes, and I said in like a hurricane. That's up there around the heart of Dixie, above St. George. The Turing inspiration. I really wanted to play the first 3 minutes of the last 2 minutes of the introduction to this book. I was having a problem with the audio here, so anyways, hey Frog, I see you there. Join in the chat. But anyways, you're going to have to get the book yourself. I think it is an excellent book. This talks about displaced wildlife, the tumbleweed, and invasive species, and erosions, and the riparian areas. You know, I say good fences make good neighbors, and it's easy. Now, there's an exception with some cows, and especially the wild cows out there in the desert. They're pretty tough, and so they might be a little harder to fence out, but good fences make good neighbors. The old cowboy here, he said one time, he says, you don't fence goats out, you don't fence them in, you fence them out. So goats a little bit harder, but sheep and cows are generally pretty easy to fence, and I think certainly some areas should be protected from their hooves, but for the most part, they're roaming over desert with just thousands of miles of likeness, and they're mostly eating stuff that otherwise is just going to grow woody and not produce good growth for grazing for others. So they actually make it better, I think, cattle do. There's a lot to say about that. And there's laws versus legal. Out there where Cliven is, the Spanish and the Mormon Trail ran through there. It wasn't a certain set of tracks, you know. Kind of shifted around from time of year into conditions. But they ended up putting a highway there that from L.A. to Salt Lake City. Used to be little bits and pieces. And so a guy came along, I forget his name, and he got community to community and got people really interested in this highway and started out just by maintaining the certain areas of their area. We go on into the range war and the cattle battle about overgrazing and grazing districts. And on to the Taylor Grazing Act of 1934. What was going on before then with overgrazing, and it's pretty interesting to note during that time the tortoise population was at its largest ever. They eat poop, and they also get the chance to get the tender bites of the cow after he or the cattle, and they come along and graze on the bushes out there, and the new growth comes back. So definitely say that this whole thing can go back to the idea that it was the I'm going to have to just sit down, I think, here, and there's so much I'm not going to get to here, but I'm going to come out to the end of the hour here before long, so start thinking about winding down. But, again, read the book. There's a lot of information there. I really took a lot out of it, from Miracles of Mormons and Coyotes and Contention, from Cattle and Conservation, and learning about sabotage of that was inspired by a book by a environmentalist, and how it was met by crowds and cows in this drums of war. So yeah, in 1976, the Endangered Species Act came along, and they locked up wilderness from logging and grazing restrictions, and they began building up the BLM army. The Sagebrush Rebellion is being fueled and fired and all along, and fed lands being contested to state and local jurisdiction. Let's talk about the cowboy contest and how you grab the bull by the horns. Well, there's a pushback on those regulations and God, guns, and the cost of management. It's the contrast between Gore and Bush of what's been called the New World Order and Agenda 21, or the quest to take over the world. From one side, you've got the rise of the militia and the wise use and backgrounds from Ruby Ridge, with God, guns and grits, bow grits that is, and what happened up in there with the destruction of exculpatory evidence, and the same thing we see with the Bundys, where that was withheld. Talking about the rise of the would-be insurrectionists from Waco, Oklahoma City, the Montana Freeman, and others that were discussed. This continuation of the question of federal ownership, to some call apartheid in the West, and we find tools of the environmentalists as the Antiquities Act and National Monuments. Here I come to a very interesting part. Shauna Cox, I got to know well in Vegas during the trials. I met her in 2014 and interviewed her there on the Bundy Ranch. But her great-uncle, Walter, what's his name, Roche? He rounded out the last cattle in Zion National Park in 1918. Thought that was very interesting. Shauna's part of People for the West. It's part of the Wise Use Movement. We the People of the Constitution. Betsy goes on to consider conspiracy theorists or theories, and others. I say there's definitely conspiracy, and there's theories about them, but conspiracy is fact. I like to use the word prospiracy for myself, and Ammon is part of, Jason Patrick could be part of that testimony that I didn't give in court as a witness, but prospiring instead of conspiring, and that'd be the opposite. Anyway, so she goes and talks about William Potter Gale and that Posse Comitatus movement, white supremacists and Christian identity, the county authority is the highest in the land. And also talking about IRS and taxes, an appeal to the sheriff for help. If not, the militia should move in when for government overreach prevention. Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, and Joe Rapaho, she talked about him, the Bill of Rights, the Second Amendment, and intolerable rules. So Shauna wrote the book called The Last Rancher Standing. Also, Mike Stickler wrote Clive and Bundy, American Patriot. I haven't read Shauna's book. I've read parts of it. I guess that's the one I need to read, too. Mike's book is really good. It's a first-hand account from Clive and while they're in prison together. I really love this part, the cowboy Mary. she was quite an interesting character. In the Escalante area, and she had cattle to be removed, but they ended up getting fenced off from water during the BLM because she wouldn't move them out. But Mary Bullocks, let's see how much time we got here. Oh boy, I'll never make it. Well, she is quite interesting. There's a song wrote about her. Might come back to that. Study of browsing and trampling the ground and invasive species and retiring permits. dismemberment of the cowboy spirit, she called it. 2001, the BLM goes into the Roundup business. Then we're going back to Mary Bullock's when they come for her cows. They confiscated the sheriff. He gave them back to her. He wasn't going to let that happen, reckon. But here's that song. It's by Curly Musgrove song about Cowboy Mary. And so Betsy was recounting some of these tales during her 90 minutes together talking with Shauna. Shauna tells Betsy how how the rancher cares for the environment. It's like a garden. She also gives the origin of the pocket constitution, you know, that Clavin and those boys all carry there in their front pocket, from Willard Cleon Skousen. He had some 2,000-page FBI file. The Freeman Institute became the National Center for Constitutional Study. I thought it was funny she called him looking like a speckled Elmer J. Fudd. And also talking about the tenets of the John Birch Society, ties to the Koch brothers, and the Mormon sense of morality. More on the White Horse Prophecy, setting right the government employees, stocking up for the apocalypse, independent cowboy lifestyle, overreach of government, resistance being amplified by the paranoid and the mistrustful of the Orwellian order and other conspiracy theories. The fight for freedom is God's fight, said Lavoie Finicum. It is the shooting shifts at that point. Support for the cause to move to higher ground and on this range where we go back to Keith Allen Nay. In 1989, the tortoise put on the Endangered Species Act, limiting the number of cattle. yeah, shit, damn, and hell are not swear words. That comes from Abigail Bundy's Clavin's mom. Now, I was kind of taken aback. I've got my notes here. Reminds me of a story with Clavin and photographer Andrew Cullen. He and I spent a day riding around. I was taken aback when I heard Ammon say that, and I said, look, he was in a little tiff with Andrew and about show me the pictures of the sniper people pointing guns at the federal agents during that day of April 12th. Now, I saw Eric Parker up there on the bridge. I'm right beneath him, but before I went underneath the bridge there, and I'm in several pictures there, you can see a little white dot, and that's me carrying my cardboard sign, which I later shrunk down to one that would pin on a lapel around my collar there to wear into court. Yes, I made a sign. Where was I? Oh, yes, Eric Parker. He was on the bridge, and there were some women there, and I remember reading later on how they went after them and took their cameras for the photographs and stuff, but I saw Eric, and they were just like, he was like posing for pictures up there. So then I went below the bridge anyways, and I was going to go down the bottom, but it was awful steep, and I seen this orange hat man that was riding around with Satilli up there in Oregon, Ken, what's his last name? He fell down the hill through a barbed wire fence, and I thought I'd say just where I was at, fine. Oh, yeah, so Colin, Andrew Cullen and Clavin are having a little spiff about all that. I'm running against the hour. You know, there's so much more talked about here. I should really just do a better job and go through and do it. Because I didn't really address anything as far as the side of the Bundys. Then I'd fully intended telling stories of my encounters, making this a more to the human interest side of the story. Betsy, you spent a short amount of time with these folks, and you're your book is very academic, which is good, but it's also a detriment in ways that leaves out the human side. I think you took the side of the prosecution in this case, and if you was to go back, and I would think that you'd owe it to yourself and to your readers to take a look from the other side. Go back and ask the stories from folks that were there. Spend a day or two with Carol or Angie. As I said, there was a lot I wanted to say that I just didn't say. Would have been my message to the Bundys. I think they're getting a raw deal. The idea that the what started it all was the cow was killing turtles out there, and that's a lie. The tortoise is benefited by cattle. He's Cliven's last rancher standing. Where are the other cows at? I don't know. What happened to the other ranchers? They gather them up and sell off. Was only Cliven's left out of 50-something ranchers? He's the only cattle left. What happened before all this time when there were more cattle? I mean, they've been limited back more and more, and Cliven came to the point where he says, I'm not going to be managed out of business. Public domain, there's certain things that are owned. Mining rights, grazing rights, water rights. Are they right? Is there got to be a change? You know, personally, I think there's and it's certainly in our lifetimes that we'd see it, but I slowly but surely, I think that there should be wildlife corridors. But can man live with the wild beast? That's where we're at. You know, they're open season on wolves up in Idaho, I guess, now. What are those wolves there? Were they the ones that went to Washington and stayed up there that were Canadian tundra wolves? A lot different animal than the timber wolves. Anyways, it's a long, long story. I've only touched on it. I think you did a good job on your book. I commend you for interacting. And that's why I say you're an ally, is you're willing to listen. The dissertation, I mean, such a large amount of work. I mean, I understand how your time would be limited when you've got so much information and so far to go in gathering, and you actually went and to speak to people. So again, commend you on that. You're a wonderful writer. I think you've only told part of the story, and I hope you'll tell more. So with that, I'll sign off. I'm done with this for now. This ends this season of What Matters of Ponder Gander of American Dissonance. I'll probably be back in cold weather with another project to air. Let me go push some buttons and stop that. Thanks for listening. I appreciate your time. And stop.